Is the April 4th, 2024 work session. I'm calling this work session to order. First item of business is determine a quorum. I see that we have 5 planning commissioners, so I believe we have a quorum. Do I have a motion to adopt tonight's agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor of adopting the agenda?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, agenda is adopted. Next item is visitor communication. This is the time provided for individuals wishing to address the Planning Commission making issues not already on the agenda. Is there anyone in the audience or on the WebEx online on Zoom who would like to comment about issues not on the agenda?
There's no one over Zoom. Anyone in the audience?
Okay. Having not heard anything, let's get straight to our workshop. I'll hand it over to staff.
Thank you, Vice Chair. As I'm working through sharing my screen, so bear with me. Juggling too many documents. Okay. For the record, Matthew Martin, City of Sisters Community Development Department. I'm joined here with Scott Woodford, Sisters Community Development Director. What we have before you tonight is part of an ongoing discussion regarding short-term rental in the City of Sisters and potential regulation amendments to the program and how it's administered. So what the goal here is to provide an update from the outcome of a couple of workshops we've had with the City Council since the last time we met, and just want to provide that update as we work our way towards a formal amendment review process. So I welcome comments or questions along the way. So please let me know if those come up. So I just want to provide the background of what we've been up to in our past workshops and discuss the outcomes of and the direction from the City Council on possible text amendments, and then again highlighting the next steps. So. Noting that what the genesis of all of this is, City Council adopted a goal to evaluate the short-term rental code language to mitigate adverse impacts on the community. And so you may recall that we've met on a couple of occasions through the fall and winter, and discussing the kind of a general overview of the administration of the program now, what those impacts are in the numbers on permitting other data we could provide relative to either code enforcement or calls to law enforcement, as well as the report from a survey that staff solicited to short-term rental operators to get feedback from them regarding who they are, how they operate, and suggestions relative to the administration of the program. So the last time we met was on February 1st, and that's where we discussed the results of the survey and then the reporting data from the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. But the conclusion of that was a list of potential themes that the Planning Commission thought would be worth considering. So we brought that list of amendments to City Council at the subsequent workshop, and just want to highlight that those recommendations were More broadly, looking at increasing the concentration limits, applying those concentration limits to condominiums, applying the concept of applying concentration limits in our commercial districts, prohibiting short-term rentals in new urban growth boundary expansion areas, limiting transferability of prior existing short-term rentals, the idea of establishing a moratorium during this time period that we evaluate and pursue adoption of any changes. And then the want to note that Planning Commission did have specific additional considerations, that being special provisions for hosted short-term rentals. That's where a property owner is present on site, and other considerations in that kind of general theme. The result was over a couple of workshops with the City Council was to refinement of that and reducing that down to some real targeted areas. And those being, one, focusing on expanding the concentration limits that are currently 250 feet to 500 feet. So in previous workshop, we provided an analysis of expanding those concentration limits to identify how many properties would be affected, either that are eligible now, that would not be eligible later.
That's 500 feet in all directions?
Correct, from property line. Correct. And to clarify that further, so if any portion of a property is within that 500-foot buffer, that prop, even if it's the corner of it is touched, that property is no longer eligible for a short-term rental. So it doesn't need to be entirely within that 500 feet, but entirely or any portion thereof. Second being applying the concentration limits to condominiums, which is carryover from those prior recommendations. But something that emerged from the last work session or workshop we had with City Council was applying the concentration limits to residential only developments in the commercial districts, or excuse me, in the downtown commercial district, which in the recently through the adoption of the efficiency measures that provided additional residential development options. Included in that package were some overlay areas within the downtown commercial district, which would allow for either single-family residential development in some areas, all the way up to multifamily residential development in other areas of the downtown commercial district. Those are specifically identified in our development code now with the adoption of those standards and highlighted in these two figures that are on the presentation on the screen. These are excerpts from the development code specifically. So the areas highlighted in yellow outline are those areas. So as Emmy's noting figure two, those are four distinct areas where either triplex or multifamily developments can be established within the downtown commercial district. And figure two is an area where single family duplex townhomes or those single family type of or smaller density, smaller intensity residential developments are allowed in the downtown commercial district. I want to highlight that this is specific, again, to residential only development.
Not mixed use, right?
Correct. So the City Council was very clear that they did not want to apply this to those mixed use environments where you'd have, for example, a commercial storefront on the ground floor and residential use upstairs. So it wouldn't apply to that because, in effect, trying to encourage those mixed use configurations while allowing for that commercial use, that's kind of I'll use the term bonus or an allowance for that residential use upstairs. So we view those mixed use buildings as commercial developments as moving forward when we're using that terminology.
Now, does that carry all the way through Sisters? So would it apply to the Sun Ranch district as well?
So that would be, meaning the application of the concentration limit, or if we'd view that as
no concentration limit if they're mixed use commercial.
Correct. Yeah. So, and that's a commercial district. So we're not applying. applying the concentration limits to those areas anyway.
Okay.
Question. So in the downtown commercial district, we have the overlays for multifamily dwellings. The 500 foot doesn't apply to downtown commercial, but it does to the multi-housing overlays.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And so this will be a, you know, a unique aspect of monitoring and applying that those concentration limits and really understanding what the land uses are within that 500 foot buffer. Any more questions there? Again, just want to echo the intent of the city council was, again, recognizing that these were adopted as efficiency measures as a means to provide housing units within our existing urban growth boundary. And this is an effort to preserve those opportunities for long-term occupancy because the idea is why go through this effort to provide these additional dwelling units only to not apply some. Residential units could in the downtown commercial district. So that's what the emphasis on applying it with this package of amendments.
And does that only apply if another residential unit has a short-term rental, not if one of the mixed use within 500 feet?
Correct. Okay.
That's an interesting question. So in the downtown commercial area, we don't have the 500 foot concentration restriction, but abutted to that, we have these residential overlays. So if I had a building or somebody had a building, I don't have a building, but if somebody were to have a building just inside the commercial zone that we can have short-term rentals, does that mean it's 500 foot before the first short-term rental within the residential overlay from that boundary? Does that make sense?
If I want to make sure I capture it. So, and maybe this is the concept acknowledging Commissioner McDougall was, so if we have a short-term rental in a mixed-use building, would any residential-only properties within 500 feet of that property, would that be no longer eligible? I think that's a new consideration. So I'm sorry if this is what the theme that you were getting at. I think that's something for discussion. I want to look at the wording that we've drafted here to see if it captures that and if that's a good policy that we're looking to accommodate. So I think what comes of that is that if the goal is to preserve residential only developments for long-term occupancy and limit the number of short-term rentals, then perhaps the concentration limit should apply for it from mixed use for eligibility, but not apply to other mixed-use buildings.
Yeah.
I follow.
Yeah, that's be kind of like fuzzy. Like easier to police, maybe, or easier to track. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like you need a computer program for some of this.
I believe that, and we do.
Okay.
I think that would be, I mean, that's why we have these conversations and have multi-tiered vetting of the amendments, because I think that's, certainly, I think the goal and intent of applying the concentration.
They need to limit. Research that and find out.
I think what we certainly can include that in any evaluation as we come forward with formal amendments.
We just want to be clear with the language.
Yep.
Yeah, that's.
Yep. So keeping this in mind as we.
Clarity.
You're right.
As we move forward.
As you cross boundaries, it could reset to zero again, or we could say the 500 feet still extends another 250 feet into that zone or.
Okay, good. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that's valuable to consider with any changes. Okay, moving to the next and final is to prohibit short-term rentals in urban growth boundary expansion and annexation areas. So those are the themes that we're looking to address. My next would be to show what those amendments really would look like in practice or in adoption. So just walking through the package here, many may not. So while we have three themes that we're looking at, there are several different sections that these changes do interface with, and a lot of it may be just restructuring the standards. So I want to highlight kind of really what's going on here in this initial draft. So the first is applying the prohibition of short-term rentals in annexation areas or urban growth boundary expansion areas. So this is adding a new section under an existing prohibited use section of the code. The council was mindful of not hamstringing any future councils from applying just a blanket prohibition to any annexation areas, because there may be opportunities in new mixed use environments or development areas, new commercial areas, for example, that it may be reasonable or appropriate to allow short-term rentals in those expansion areas. So this is first establishes that they're prohibited unless otherwise specifically permitted in an annexation agreement approved by city council. So with that annexation agreement, there's some flexibilities or some conditions that can be applied to those areas of annexation. So prohibited unless otherwise allowed. Okay. Next being the concentration limit section of the code. You'll see under E1 the change from 250 feet to 500, and really just a reformatting here of applying the verbiage from where the valid legal or either approved or legal nonconforming are allowed, just restructuring of the standard.
Can you define nonconforming, please?
Nonconforming is a use that was lawfully established at a time when the use was allowed, but is no longer currently allowed.
So they're grandfathered in.
Grandfathered is a common term used. Nonconforming is the kind of the legal terminology that we use. Yeah, so it allows you to, even though the code changes and that particular use is no longer allowed in an area, you can continue to operate that without abandonment as a vested right.
But then if you sold that property, the new owner doesn't get the grandfathered or nonconforming use, right?
That's a nuance with, are you talking nonconforming uses in general or?
I'm talking about this
short-term rentals. Yeah, so that's a nuance with short-term rentals, is that there are those that were approved after 2018 that are not transferable, whereas those that were lawfully established prior to that can be transferred because they were a nonconforming use.
Okay.
And then the addition of subsection B, including the downtown commercial district, applying it to residential only developments within those two figures from the code, and explicitly saying that the concentration limit is not applicable to commercial mixed use developments. I think this is the target of that discussion of when and how to apply the concentration limit otherwise in the downtown commercial district. So this may come in a different form when we come back for formal public hearing and adoption process, but keeping in mind kind of that the concept that was discussed tonight.
Minor nitpick, would it be helpful to add a hyphen between residential and only, so that it's viewed as modifying development? That's the journalism major in me.
Yep.
Journalism and attorney. Ooh.
One didn't really help the other. Okay.
Your words cost more money today than in journalism.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Again, why we have these discussions. And included in subsection 2 is specific reference to condominiums and their applicability, the concentration limit to those uses. Just an effort to be more clear. Since we have this list of examples, why not include it there?
Condominiums were previously excluded, right?
Exempt from the concentration limits. So you could have multiple condominiums units within one development. And we do have that in various areas of town. And then 3 is the removal of that exemption from the concentration limits for condominiums. And then new number 3 is just changing the limit from 250 to 500.
So if someone bought a condominium previous, that was a short-term rental to 2018, that would be, they would carry forth the right to have it continue a short-term rental.
Correct. And so this is where we're getting into that prior existing use sections of the code and addressing those that may be non-conforming uses or those that were approved prior to to when the transfer limit was established in 2018. So this is some wordsmithing because prior to, you know, what it indicated was either those short-term rentals approved under the standards that were adopted in 2013 were allowed to continue and allowed to transfer. What this does is puts the sideboard on, there's a special, this subgroup of short-term rentals that were approved under a certain set of standards that can continue, but they're still subject to some requirements, unique requirements under the short-term rental code. But the addition of subsection D is the application of those that were approved after 2013 at a time when the transfer limits were in place, that transfer limit remains applicable to those.
You need to have a matrix set up for this.
Yeah, this has gotten tricky because we have these different time periods and different carve-outs. And with these new changes, we need to make sure we capture that. You can continue to operate generally as non-conforming because some of the standards have changed, but we want to make sure that that transfer limit remains applicable to you that have been approved at the time when the transfer limit was in place.
So the transfer limit was in place between 2013 and 2018? Because then I'm mistaken.
The intent of this is to apply it to when the transfer limit was adopted. I believe it was in 2013, but I want to double check. And now that you raised the question, it may have been adopted specifically in 2018.
Okay.
And that's when we wanted to apply from the time period. So that I need to check my notes on this. Particular one, but it's not to be retroactively or to a time when it wasn't applicable, but more so when during that time when it was. And so this may need to be changed to 2018, but I'll double check that.
I remember I was involved in the first, I think the 2018 decision.
Okay, good to have that perspective. Okay, that's the extent of the changes that have been drafted to date. Certainly a fluid process that it's been now as we kind of got to a draft configuration. And then as you evaluate these standards, you know, as we kind of to some extent began to kind of wordsmith and contemplate what the policy should be, there are going to be those opportunities when it comes time for recommendation following the public hearing to tweak this either with wordsmithing or if you believe some other policy should be corrected or amended or expanded, that could be part of any recommendation.
Is there a fining system involved right now? If I if I was running a short-term rental and I didn't get a permit, and somebody complains and the city comes and knocks on my door and says, do you have a short-term rental? And I say, yes. Is there a fine that I have to pay? The city fine me for that?
If you're operating a short-term rental
without
illegally,
a permit, yes.
There is that opportunity. I have to look into the operating license code to see if there is a specific fine that's built into that. I know that there are opportunities if there's kind of violations or ongoing violations to impose some penalty. Typically, if someone, you know, with land use code and code enforcement, we look for voluntary compliance first. And if that isn't resolved through that voluntary compliance, then you go to citation and begin to impose those fees. But we can double check on the actual operating license if there's a.
And is there a fining system in place now for, let's say I own and I have a permit to rent it, and the police are called at 2 o'clock in the morning because I rented it to, it's a loud party. Does there a fine? Is there a fine involved then? Some kind of a fine that I have to pay because the police show up and give me a ticket for loud and obnoxious party noise?
Don't believe there's a fine in place for the simply for the call being made to the property. I think it would be associated with any ticketing or citations that are applied by the sheriff's office. But
is the city council is interested in something like that, or have they mentioned anything like that, a fining system for short-term rentals that are a nuisance to the neighborhood?
I don't know that that's been a detailed part of this discussion. I think that could be an offshoot. You know, where we're focused primarily is on our development code standards.
Sure.
Where if there could be a natural next step is evaluating the operating license criteria and what those license fees to obtain those licenses and if there's any other penalties. So that could be an offshoot. And
I was just
curious. We could carry that forward as something that they.
There are provisions in the code. If you have three or more code violations in any 365 days, that could be grounds for revocation of the license. So there are some protections in the code to make sure that there's compliance with the rules.
Do you have any anecdotal data whether that's a problem within the city of Sisters?
Not according to the feedback. Based on our code violation, our code calls for code enforcement are very small compared to relative to short-term rentals. You may get some calls to the police to turn down music at night. There's some, I think they've heard some reports of some noise violations, but it's not just calls to the site that constitutes potential revocation. It's actual violations that we would track. That we could track to use to revoke something.
And to build on that, I believe there's been one circumstance a few years back where due to repeated issues that one license was revoked. So that system has been implemented and utilized.
Yeah, I read stories about communities all up and down the West Coast, tourist communities like ours, Palm Springs area, where it's got out way out of hand and the city councils have stepped up and done a pretty substantial fine for if the police ever show up at the place and they pass that down to the person who rented it. So I was just interested if the city council was.
During our February workshop.
Beg your pardon?
During our February workshop, staff provided a really cool report from DSO that showed the comparison between short-term rentals and long-term rentals as far as calls going to Deschutes County Sheriff. Okay. So that's.
And this is an opportunity to highlight to the commission, those in attendance or that may be reviewing this, that in if there's an identified or a concern of a potential violation related to short-term rental or any land use, it's important to contact city code enforcement so that that can be recorded, investigated, and either resolved or at least noted, because absent information.
The police don't trade information to the city typically, right?
It's not a typical. So we have our code enforcement is one mechanism for compliance or addressing violations. There is, you know, law enforcement that goes out to any number of calls. And now we could get in a practice of requesting and sharing that data. There are limitations within that data. As they record that information, they being the sheriff, they don't identify if the property is a short-term rental or if the violation, or excuse me, the call is associated with short-term renters. You know, it's just general characterization of noise, nuisance, animals, parking, whatever the call is related to. It's an imperfect system of knowing where those calls. We can get the address associated, but we don't know the full scope of what that call may be related to. But different systems in place to help monitor and note and address ongoing issues. Okay. Well, that's the package of amendments that, in their draft form that City Council has carried forward and also gave direction to staff to initiate the formal review process. This has kind of been the fact-finding and discussion aspect of the goal and the process of evaluating the short-term rental program. With these identified amendments, it's time to carry it forward to creating a file, beginning to implement the formal review process. That next step we plan with you following this workshop would be that public hearing. Our target is still kind of up in the air, but maybe we'll be sometime later this spring, either May, likely June, to have that public hearing. And as you know, but just to highlight that following the public hearing, it's the Planning Commission provides a recommendation to the City Council that will then be considered with the project record and any additional testimony at a public hearing before City Council. And City Council is the final decision maker and adopts any changes or none via an ordinance.
Is there a moratorium in place now until the decision is made? Or
I'm glad you highlight that. No moratorium was pursued. It was discussed with City Council and was realizing that there were particular notice requirements. DLCD requires a 45-day notice prior to any public hearing considering a moratorium, and a public hearing, drafting of findings, and then a decision. Yeah. And it was decided that that process and that those resources allocated to that process could be better used to move forward with this formal adoption process. Well, I'm available for any questions that you do have. Otherwise, I think we're in a good position to move forward and come back for public hearing. And I appreciate the comments even up to and then including today relative to what you're seeing, and please keep those coming because we want to make sure that we're adopting or considering kind of the nuances, the implications, and the goals and the policies that we're looking to implement here.
Make sure we clarify that date.
Yes, absolutely. Made note of that. Yeah. That's important to me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Else have any other questions or?
Nope.
All right. Well, moving on to, I guess, staff and commissioner comments, not necessarily related to the workshop, right? So if any staff or commissioners want to weigh in with a comment? Anything new? Gentlemen,
just not new, but just noting that at the next meeting, April 18th, will be the public hearing for the text amendments for related to the tourist commercial district. Got notice published in the Nugget and mailed notice to participants has gone out today. So next steps will be staff is currently working on the staff report and in preparation for the public hearing that will be issued no less than 7 days prior to the public hearing. Looking forward to what's next for you.
Right. And then after that, after we get those cleared out, eventually we will bring back defensible space and building hardening. Those have been put on the back burner because of these other more pressing, I guess, amendments, but they're still under consideration and we're still planning on bringing them back at some point. So we just have to try to get some cleared out first. Have the interviews for the planning commissioner candidates. It was supposed to happen this week, but it didn't work out. So next week is the target. So we hope to have our seventh member on board again here soon. So we have two applicants that we're interviewing. So should know by the end of the month who's appointed, and hopefully have them in place for the May meetings. Amy, did you have any updates? Arbor Day, you want to make an Arbor Day plug?
Make an Arbor Day plug. Hold on. Make sure my mic's back. Okay. So we do have Arbor Day this month. It's going to be on Friday, April 26th. All of you are welcome to participate if you'd like. We're working with a class of 20 students here in Sisters to plant over 100 tree seedlings at Creekside Park. So it'll be a mixture of ponderosa trees and some other riparian appropriate seedling species. And I think it's scheduled for 10 or 10:30 on that Friday. So it'll be lots of fun. And it's something that we do every year as part of being a Tree City USA. So,
what age group?
It's a broad age group, actually. It's age 4 to 11. So it's kind of this private school that I was able to connect with, and I'm happy that we've got a good group that'll be there.
Sounds fun. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Last call for commissioner comments. All right. Well, with that, I guess we are adjourned.
Wow.